Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and I'm happy to have Carl Schreck, the enterprise editor at RFERL, as my guest again on the second week of the show. Welcome, Carl.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here again.
Thanks. Well, U.S. President Donald Trump canceled a scheduled two-hour meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin at a G20 summit in Buenos Aires. He cited Russia's seizure of Ukrainian naval vessels and sailors. But Putin and Trump did meet briefly at a dinner at the summit. Putin later said they had discussed the confrontation near the Kerch Strait, but he indicated they disagreed on it and that neither president had changed his stance as a result. So Russia's still holding the 24 Ukrainian crewmen, despite Western calls for their release. And in other comments, Putin reiterated his claim that the current government in Kiev does not want peace in eastern Ukraine and said Russia will make it easier for Ukrainians to get Russian citizenship if they want it. Now, those remarks were interpreted by some as pointing to more aggression, maybe a new offensive by the Russia-backed separatists, or an indication that Russia is moving closer to asserting formal control over the separatist-held areas in eastern Ukraine. My own feeling on the sailors and ships is that they could be released or swapped, but not until the sailors are tried in a Russian court. I think Russia kind of wants to have them as hostages, like Nadiya Savchenko before, and now Oleg Sentsov and others. And I think also think that while there will be threatening words from Russia regarding eastern Ukraine in the coming weeks and months, like those that Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova made last week, nothing major is really likely to happen before the Ukrainian presidential election on March 31st. Carl, what are your thoughts?
Yes, Steve, I agree that that we're probably going to see a trial and they're probably not going to be return to Ukraine before then. As far as the new offensive, I'm skeptical. I think this is, I mean, if you look how the Kremlin works in situations like these, generally there would be a dramatic situation like the one that unfolded in the Sea of Azov, and then kind of, you know, the Kremlin will take a step back and kind of wait and play its cards. You know, it's kind of, in some ways, it's moving the goalposts a little bit. You know, they take a dramatic step and then, you know, use that as leverage for negotiating purposes.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, Putin is sort of setting the stage for that by saying, I think he was asked, you know, what about the sailors? Are you going to release them? He said it's too early to talk about that. We have to go through, have the trial. So is this kind of prolonging this idea that they're going to be tried in an independent court and that sort of thing. So, but that also, you know, it sort of advances the narrative, but it also buys the Kremlin time to, for one thing, I think, let the situation kind of become reality or become perceived as reality, and also, to make decisions about what to do next. Now, another event happening this week is happening actually in just over an hour from now. A Soyuz rocket with a Russian, an American, and a Canadian aboard is scheduled to blast off from Baikonur in Kazakhstan for the International Space Station. It's the first manned Soyuz launch since a failed launch in October, which was pretty spectacular. It sent a NASA astronaut and a Russian cosmonaut heading back to Earth in a ballistic descent that was harrowing, but everything turned out okay. They were unharmed. So this launch is the first one since then. And then tomorrow, the private U.S. company SpaceX is set to send a supply craft to the ISS from Florida. So that's the U.S. side or private company getting involved in its role. It seems like the success of today's Soyuz launch is pretty crucial for the Russian space agency. What do you think, Carl?
Well, certainly the success of the launch will, you know, is important. Even if there is a successful launch, the Russian space industry, you know, has, you know, deep systemic problems that won't be addressed by one successful launch. Starting with essentially decades of brain drain following the fall of the Soviet Union, you had a real generation gap when young scientists in the 1990s who should have gone into the industry did not. And, you know, we've got, you know, other issues. Even last week, Alexei Kudrin said, called Roscosmos, basically the Russian space agency, the champion in terms of financial violations, saying that basically billions of rubles were basically have basically been stolen. And of course, you know, as of 2020, you know, NASA is going to stop dealing with the Roscosmos to send its astronauts into space. So there are revenue losses there as well. So while it's obviously very important, especially from a prestige aspect, you know, the Russian space industry is going to have to deal with a lot of serious issues.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that change in 2020 makes this in a way sort of academic. I mean, it has to be done right, but the long term effects. It's not gonna change anything much in the future. Thanks for that, Carl. On another issue, in Russia, Human Rights Watch is issuing a report later this week on the so-called gay propaganda law that Putin signed in 2013. I haven't heard that much about this law very recently. The law made it a crime in Russia to spread what it called the, quote, propaganda of non-traditional sexual relations to minors. But there was a lot of talk at the time about the potential effects of the law. And now this report, it's not out yet, but Human Rights Watch says it will detail how the 2013 law, whose stated aim is to protect young people, has had a deeply damaging effect on LGBT youth in Russia. I think that'll be it'll be interesting to read.
Yeah, I mean, the negative consequences of this law were never going to be about direct punishment or punitive measures for violating the law itself. It was more about facilitating a general kind of repressive atmosphere for LGBT people in Russia, and in particular LGBT youth. I mean, already there's a very prominent LGBT youth support group called Dieti 404, which has faced pressure from authorities, and for young people who are sexual minorities, it's a very increasingly unpleasant atmosphere, based on what I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Putin has said, he said at the time, and I think he's said since, that, you know, Russia does not discriminate against gays. And obviously, according to this law, you know, it's not technically discriminating, but you're seeing all these effects. You saw, I think, in the 2 or 3 years after the law, there were reports of a spike in violence against LGBT people, and now you have this report that apparently is going to detail the negative effects on LGBT youth. So I guess the effects are still kind of coming out and being understood. Well, thanks very much, Carl. It's great to have you on again, and that's it for today's show. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward. Thank you.